Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Glowatz. Ben Jarofsky writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Haven't seen you in a while, David.
Take a good look. Today we're talking about your article that's titled, How I Spent My Summer Break.
Oh, my goodness.
Firing Teachers.
Oh, I love that article.
It appeared on August 15th, 2013. And in this article, you have a Northside Elementary School principal who goes under the pseudonym
Jackie. You're not going to say Jackie's real name, please.
I don't even know it.
Okay.
And you told how she and her school has been weathering budget cuts and the longer school day.
Mm-hmm.
A part of your article that's most interesting to me is where Jackie tells of a principal training.
Oh, my God.
She had to attend.
A waste of money.
That she said was a waste of money and will cost Chicago Public Schools, CPS, $20 million.
Over 3 years, I believe.
That they contracted in a no-bid contract to a firm at which Chicago Public Schools CEO Barbara Bird Bennett used to work.
Yeah.
I wonder about insider contracts as an area in which CPS wastes money.
Mm.
We've talked plenty about lost revenue with respect to the likes of tax increment financing, and we've talked about excessive expenses in terms of management pay increases. Have you looked at contracts?
Not nearly as much as I should. All credit due. Let's give a shout out to Sarah Karp from Catalyst. She was the one who really did a great job. I urge all listeners to go back, if they haven't already, and read that article, which didn't get any pickup, as far as I know, in the mainstream news.
I think it's at catalystchicago.org is their website.
But if you do Sarah Karp, K-A-R-P, and Sarah has an H on the end of it, and Catalyst, you'll find it, and it's a great article, great investigative reporting. Yeah, that's a whole other issue of who they contract for their services. If I could, I'd put together a squadron of really smart and eager activists just to go through every single one of those contracts, which are online. You could see them as part of the routine minutes past the monthly meetings. So no, I have not given that nearly the attention it deserves. I probably don't have the time.
So you're charging the citizen journalists of Chicago to step forward.
Step forward and take a look, poke around and see what you can find and get back to me. I always say there's three elements to the problem of financing education in schools. And to start, we don't give the schools enough money, at least in comparison to like the Nutriers and the Latins and the labs that are like $30,000 per kid. And we're what, $14,000? Then the money that we do raise for the schools, to a good chunk of it, is diverted to the TIF program. So we lose money there. And then, of course, we squander the money that we have. So this particular point about the $20 million contract for ridiculously absurd principal, whatever, pep talks or whatever they are, professional guidance, whatever.
At least they have PowerPoint.
They have PowerPoint. Yeah, I don't even have PowerPoint, so they're ahead of me.
It means you'll never get a training contract.
I'll never get a training contract. Such a waste of money. It's just ridiculous. You know, the principals have enough on their plate to do without having to go to one of these things.
You talked about the per pupil funding. I want to talk about that scheme. I wonder if you could summarize the difference between how a neighborhood school got funded before this school year, this coming school year, where CPS shifted to what it calls per pupil funding.
Yes.
How did a school's annual revenue get determined beforehand?
Good point. We always talk about things that got left out of the article. I cut this, so I'm glad to go into this at greater detail.
And this isn't a setup, folks. I didn't know that.
No, he did not know that. Yeah. So the way it used to be done is that teaching positions were allocated by the number of students in a school. So let's just make it as simple as we can. Let's say you had 100 students in the school and the contract says just 28 kids per classroom. So roughly that's four teachers, okay? And then the principal was pretty much free to hire whoever he or she wanted and then was reimbursed. So if the principal decided that she wanted to hire Dave Glowatz, who was a 20-year veteran with a PhD and was at the top of the pay scale, she was free to do that. And so she would have to pay Glowatz $100,000. And the board gave $100,000. Under the new system, money is allocated by strictly the number of children. So you still could have four teachers, but you have less money to play with. So
let me stop you for a second. before the number of teachers was determined by the number of students.
That is correct.
And now it's the amount of money that is determined by the number of students.
Right.
Let me delve further there. The amount of pay that the teachers get, it could be variable.
Exactly.
In your example, that the principal could have hired four low-earning teachers or four high-earning teachers.
Exactly. So under the system they have now of allocating money strictly by the number of children that are in a school, it's like, if any of there are sports fans out there, it's like a hard cap on the amount of money a principal could spend on personnel. And so there is no incentive whatsoever to go out and get an experienced, quote-unquote, expensive teacher. Like our example, the Dave Glowatz, who's making $100,000. Even if the principal thinks Dave Glowatz is the greatest teacher in the world and wants to pay, she'll be punished effectively because Dave Glowatz's salary, $100,000, will come out of the pot that she may need to hire another teacher. So essentially, this new formula gives an incentive to hire teachers with less experience.
And to jettison higher earning teachers that might be better.
It's exactly the point. It's all part of this larger process that's been happening. We've been talking about it for 3 years. It began under Huberman, where they went after tenure with redefinition, and that is to fire teachers and make them more vulnerable and bring in cheaper teachers who are very vulnerable, who they have absolutely no tenure. Going back to our sports analogy, if you're going to build a great team, the better the players, the more expensive they'll cost. Well, we're working against that. But furthermore, we're not giving incentive for teachers to stay in the profession.
Now, what about sources other than per pupil funding? Don't schools get money for things like the number of students who attend the school whose families are below the poverty line?
Right. There's other elements. See, this is where the principals juggle. There's money that comes in for the number of kids who are below the poverty line. There's poverty funds. You hear this gripe, which is kind of perverse, that schools in wealthier communities with more of a middle class or upper middle class student body complain that they don't get the poverty fund. Well, you don't have poverty kids, you know, so those are the money.
But they could use the money.
Yeah, they could. But everybody could use the money. You know, I mean, everybody needs money. Everybody's starving. So there's those. Then there's grants that they could bring in on their own independently.
And let's go back to the poverty funds. Do the schools still get that under the per pupil funding scheme?
Absolutely.
So that hasn't been taken away from
them. No, that hasn't been. And what I was talking to Jackie about, she was talking about how to allocate her poverty funds as well. And she was a big believer in using discretionary money, is what they call it, to supplant the reading instruction. Her big thing was to have teachers come in that could do pullouts so you could just reinforce the reading lessons, almost like, not tutors, so to speak, because it wouldn't be one-on-one, but get more, you know, smaller classrooms for reading. She thought that was very important, and that was one of the things that she had to cut back on.
Another source of revenue that schools have lost is if schools had contracts with cell phone companies to put towers.
Oh, my God.
CPS decided that instead of the money going to the school, that money had to be put into a pot, and then it would be divvied up.
Which, by the way, I didn't write about this yet, but I remember reading that about that in the Bright One and Sun-Times. I thought that was really perverse because I recall when the cell phone towers transmitters issue first arose, I would get calls from sort of like Green Party parents who were very concerned about radiation and didn't think that schools should be in a position where they would have to rent themselves out for these transmitters because it's the potential of exposing children to hazards. And I remember the Board of Ed telling me absolutely not, that these Green Party people are alarmists and that there's no health consequence whatsoever. That was the argument. But I took the point of view, well, if the schools, you figure if a school is willing to potentially put its children in harm's way just to pick up a few shekels, then they should get the money. They're the kids who are in harm's way, you know? So I think it's really unfair that one group is the one bearing the burden of the radiation, if there's such a thing, and yet the money is being spread to people who are far removed from it.
That's interesting.
Thank you, sir.
I imagine that Jackie is not the only principal whose stories you've heard. Do you have other
stories
you can tell us?
It's amazing. Over the last This is further evolution of the radicalization of Chicago public school employees. It began with the teachers, and now it's spread to the principals. I've never seen anything quite like this.
Inspired by Edward Snowden and now Chelsea
Manning.
Manning, yeah.
I got that, but whatever. again, it goes. Let's pat ourselves on the back. We were the first to be talking about this stuff. Happened at the end of the Daley reign, when the mayor sort of lost his mind over not getting the Olympics, and so he took it out on the teachers. You know, there's just so much uncertainty at the public schools. There's so much change. There's just these contrary orders and ultimatum that come down from time to time and make it so difficult to teach. And now principals have been radicalized to a certain degree.
They're becoming whistleblowers.
I mean, yeah, and so I get calls, and most of them are, please don't let my name be known, but here's what's really going on. So in the case of Jackie, I felt compelled to tell the story because what has been lost is the first great initiative of the Emanuel education regime, and that is the longer school day, which turned out to be an unfunded mandate by Emanuel, forcing everybody to spend more time in the building, and they don't know what to do with the time. They don't have the money. Whatever money he gave has now been pulled back. He didn't give enough to start with, so it was inadequate to begin with. So there's this tremendous gap between what's real and what's propaganda that's been put out by the Emanuel administration.
And it's growing.
Yes, the gap is growing, and it will continue to grow as less money is spent on the schools. If you want quality education, you have to spend the money on it. And this gets back to the question we started with about the three, you know, there's not enough money to begin with. Some of it's diverted and a lot of it's wasted. So these principals who are right there in the front line, so to speak, are now starting to speak out. And what's interesting, I thought it was yesterday, Rahm Emanuel, you know, he does this every now and then. He gathers a bunch of principals into a room. And yesterday he was giving out money to them. He was distributing money that had been
rich people donated.
It's just like so anti-democratic, the whole thing.
For performance. They were performance awards.
Yeah, and the principals were sort of embarrassed because they know they're being used as show ponies in this propaganda game. They know the reality is that they're facing tremendous cuts. They don't have enough money to begin with. And yes, everybody likes to get more money, but it's sort of embarrassing in the face of these cuts to get like, I don't know, $5,000 or whatever it is on a personal level as a check made out to you while people are losing their jobs and more kids are going into classrooms.
An interesting perspective I heard on this recently is when we rely on rich people to do things like fund education, we rely on their whims and their priorities as opposed to that money being distributed by government, which is somewhat more accountable to us, at least on paper.
I agree with what you just said. It's anti-democratic, lower D. If rich people want to get involved in the education game, they probably should do it on their own. But this program where they set it up and then the mayor then distributes the money and then, you know, from his cronies and pals that basically to shut the principals up so they don't come public. And, you know, it's just sort of where we're at with public education in Chicago, and it breeds a lot of cynicism. Here's the other thing I find interesting. This is a further radicalization of Chicago public school employees, is that more of them, and principals are now added to the list, are becoming aware of the TIF diversion and the TIF surplus. And so I'll get calls from principals asking, well, what can we do? Like, of me, of all people, you know, what can we do to get this TIF money? I have some of it upstairs in my attic. If you come by, I'll write you a check. There's a realization, you know, again, under Daley, he somehow or other managed for the last 15 years or so to divert the money into his slush funds, take care of his big ticket projects like Millennium Park, and somehow or other keep the school principals satisfied and the teachers' union satisfied. That started to fall apart at the end after the Olympics, of course. Now it's just accelerated, and so people are becoming aware of the TIF diversion, which is potentially very upsetting to Mayor Emanuel, which is why you'll probably see him in the coming weeks try to dissuade people from getting involved by telling them there's actually no money in the funds for them, or it's too complicated to send it back. Or
maybe he'll give you a performance award to shut you up.
I'm sure the money's in the mail.
Thanks for joining me today, Ben.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, we welcome your suggestions for future interviews via Facebook and Twitter. Search for Inside Chicago Government. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.